I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how Indianapolis plans to celebrate a big birthday. My guests will be Jeff Bennett, Deputy Mayor of Community Development, Scarlett Martin, who oversees the Mayor's Create Indy Initiative, and Steve Campbell, Vice President of Communications for the Indianapolis Colts. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about Indianapolis's upcoming bicentennial today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Jeff Bennett, Deputy Mayor of Community Development for the City of Indianapolis, Scarlett Martin, who oversees the Mayor's Create Indy Initiative, and Steve Campbell, Vice President of Communications for the Indianapolis Colts. Welcome to all of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. So I'll start with Jeff, just work my way around the line. Give me an overview of what's coming. I mean, this is a big moment. You only turn 200 once.
One time, that's right. And it's a really big birthday. We'll begin celebrating a year from now. The mayor assembled a bipartisan bicentennial commission that's been meeting for about the last 6 months, beginning to think about event planning and how we celebrate or will celebrate this significant milestone in the city's history.
So, Scarlett, what are some of the themes that we're looking at that, in that 200?
So we have four major themes that we're using to kind of guide and shape our celebration: history, civic pride, innovation, and legacy.
And could you walk me through how those were chosen?
Yeah, so the Mayoral Bicentennial Commission talks about a lot of values that they had and a lot of collaborators and partners that we think that will be part of this celebration. And we felt it was very important to emphasize Indianapolis's history and who is part of that, but also think about the ways in which right now things are changing and we have a growing tech sector and all of the economic development that's happening right now. So innovation needed to also be a part of that. So really, I think it was pretty natural that these four themes came together, and I look forward to all the different ways that we can highlight them.
Okay. And Steve? Tell me how the Colts plug into this.
Well, I'm not here with my Colts hat on today. Okay. I'm very honored to serve as one of the co-chairs of the Bicentennial Commission. So it's all about Indianapolis today, not just the Colts. But Mayor Hogsett put together this commission about 6 to 8 months ago and asked me, along with some other very recognizable names in our city, to serve as co-chairs. For instance, former Deputy Mayor John Krause, who is Deputy Mayor with Mayor Hudnut, is one of the co-chairs. Yvonne Shaheen, who is a super volunteer in the community. Kira Amstutz, head of the Indiana Humanities Council. Shannon Williams with the Mind Trust. Molly Chavers, who used to run Indy Hub. And Justice Ted Boehm, who is, as many people know, one of the very influential mothers and fathers of this city in the last 50 years. And so it's a great group of people to work with, and we look forward to guiding the bicentennial celebration.
We shouldn't forget our honorary co-chairs.
Oh, that's a very good point, Jeff. Our honorary co-chairs are Mayor Bart Peterson and Mayor Greg Ballard. Our two last mayors have graciously volunteered their time and their energy to helping lead this effort as well.
So on those four themes that Scarlett mentioned, it was your group that that decided on them?
Sure.
How did that walk me through how that discussion took place?
Well, you know, it was great because the mayor's staff came to us with some proposals and some ideas for us to take a look at. And as Jeff said, the commission's been meeting for about the last 6 months or so, getting our affairs in order and starting all this extensive planning process. And so those themes really captured, you know, the areas that we wanted to celebrate about Indianapolis. Obviously, you know, our city's history, that goes without saying, but civic pride is something that we'll continue to emphasize. And then, just like Scarlett said, with innovation, you know, there are things going on in the city right now. I mean, today is part of our history as well. Mm-hmm. So we want to highlight not only the innovative things that we've done in the past, but the innovative things that are going on right now.
And I think the legacy piece is the one that might be the most interesting, because while we're certainly going to look back over the last 200 years of city history and how we got to where we are today, what do we want the city to be 50 years from now or 100 years from now? So the legacy piece is almost a look forward at the Indianapolis that we would strive to become.
How do you do that? Or is that still a work in progress?
Well, so it's still a work in progress, but I think what we're doing right now is looking at the Indianapolis Centennial Celebration of 1920 to see what they thought the future of Indianapolis might be, and are we there today? And then when we think about something like the White River Vision Plan that was just launched or is being launched right now this week, that's a 50-year plan to re-engage the city's relationship or reignite the city's relationship with the White River, which was so instrumental in our founding. Well, if it's going to take 50 years to implement a plan for river revitalization, that is a look forward and something that could be a legacy project of the Bicentennial.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Indianapolis's upcoming Bicentennial celebration. Starts next year. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So let's move away from this idea of themes and talk a bit about what stories are we going to tell here? I mean, really, at the end of the day, history is a story of people and a city. A city is made up of the people who inhabit it. What stories are we looking at telling here? Steve, I'll start with you.
Well, I think you've alluded to a couple of them, but I really think it's about. I mean, in my head, I think of it in three ways. It's the people, the places, and the events that happened in Indianapolis over the last 200 years. And, you know, all of those are important, but obviously the people who come from Indianapolis and who have made their mark not only here in Indianapolis and or in the state, but also nationally or globally, we want to celebrate, you know, those people and call attention to these folks who have done great things from Indianapolis. One of the things that I'm always surprised about is how few citizens know how many global influential citizens have come out of Indianapolis. And so we want to celebrate all those folks. You know, we just lost, you know, Senator Lugar and Senator Bayh, who were a big part of Indianapolis and Indiana history for such a long time. And, you know, so we want to celebrate people like them, people like Madam Walker, who had left a big mark on the city, Kurt Vonnegut, David Letterman. I mean, we can go on and on and on with all the famous people, Benjamin Harrison, people who came from Indianapolis and made a mark globally. So we want to really celebrate them and the events and then the places and neighborhoods of our city.
Scarlett, what are these celebrations going to look like?
I think they will take a lot of different forms. So we are going to be launching a process through which our Bicentennial Commission will actually be accepting proposals from different organizations and entities to have their events or their initiatives be official Bicentennial events or initiatives. And so I think that could take the form of a neighborhood celebration or gathering. It could take the form of an exhibit, arts exhibit, or some type of history exhibit. It could take the form of a giant ice cream social in the middle of downtown. I really think it could be all different forms and will probably engage all different sectors, which really is our hope.
Is the goal, Jeff, to try to create multiple entry points for people here to take part in the milestone?
I think that's exactly right. So there will certainly be city signature events. And in fact, in the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing some kind of intensive brainstorming and event planning about what the city might do to celebrate. So, for example, the sesquicentennial celebration in 1971, the first 4th of July fireworks off of a skyscraper took place that summer as part of the sesquicentennial mm-hmm. celebration for the city. So are there events that we can create related to the bicentennial that could be something that we repeat year after year? But then, to Scarlett's point, we really want this to be an inclusive event. And so looking to cast as wide a net as possible for community projects, neighborhoods, churches, organizations, some of our institutional partners are planning bicentennial events, but to really make this as broad and as deep as we can.
Is it, Steve, is the goal here to make it sort of a, I'm trying to think how I want to phrase this question, an internal celebration, meaning it's focused pretty much on the people who live here? Or are we looking at this also as something that might attract tourists or visitors from outside?
Yeah, I think when you're a great world class city like Indianapolis, you're thinking about all of those things all the time. And so certainly this is going to be a chance for people who are who live here or are from here and might live in other parts of the country or the world now, who are from here. But if this attracts people who want to come and visit our city for other reasons and other purposes to visit all the great amenities and attractions we have in the city, then that would be great as well. I think we're going to focus most of our time on the people who live here, but we welcome all.
Well, we have a number of signature events that are taking place already in the city where visitors will naturally be here. So we've talked to Visit Indy about having a postcard set in hotel rooms, or mm-hmm. if we're giving tours, walking tours of downtown during an event, to have a bicentennial component, an Indianapolis history component to that tour, for example.
What parts of this do you think would be most attractive to outsiders, to visitors? Scarlett, I'll start with you, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts.
Yeah, so I think something unique about Indianapolis, obviously, is our sports and major conventions and all the people who visit kind of for things that maybe aren't unique to our city. But I think we have the opportunity to really demonstrate how unique our city is through those large events. And so, for example, arts has always been a big part of our sports strategy, which may not be known to outsiders, but I think we have an incredible opportunity to showcase the ways in which those kind of go together.
Jeff.
You know, I think an interesting story to be told, and even to Indianapolis residents, is the idea that we might actually have two birthdays. Mm-hmm. We have a June 1820 date mm-hmm. that was significant in our founding and a January 1821 date that was significant in our founding. To be able to engage people in a conversation about having two birthdays is interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's her anticipating actually the next segment's line of questioning, but that's okay. You can tease it. Steve, same question to you. What do you think would pull people in from the outside?
Everyone who lives here knows how great the city is, and it's just a matter of getting that message out. But I think some of our existing events that we have are going to pull people in like they do every single year. But I think just the sheer number of historical figures and events and things that happened here, I think, are going to be of interest to a lot of folks, not just in Indianapolis, but, like, you know, as I said earlier, there were, you know, these are folks who made global impacts in many different areas and industries in the world, and so I think the onus is on us to make it an attractive and interesting and enjoyable story so that people want to have it. But I think it's there.
Is there going to be a focus on sort of the hidden parts of this? You know, like it amazes me. Relatively few people know that this was one of the great jazz hotspots mm-hmm. In the country, and you know, people think of Kansas City or New Orleans or Chicago. Even St. Louis, but somehow Indianapolis very rarely makes its way into that conversation.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I'm drawn to the history that's off the beaten path, the sort of weird, unique stuff. And we have so much of it in Indianapolis that storytelling is going to be a significant component of the bicentennial. And ideally, those stories that might fly under the radar otherwise, we have a year to shine a light on them.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about an upcoming big, even monumental birthday for the city of Indianapolis. It's bicentennial. It's 200th birthday. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so in several ways. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jeff Bennett. He is Deputy Mayor of Community Development for the City of Indianapolis. Scarlett Martin, who oversees the Mayor's Create Indy Initiative. And Steve Campbell, who is Vice President of Communications for the Indianapolis Colts. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the upcoming bicentennial of Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Jeff Bennett, Deputy Mayor of Community Development for the City of Indianapolis, Scarlett Martin, who oversees the Mayor's Create Indy Initiative, and Steve Campbell, who's Vice President of Communications for the Indianapolis Colts and one of the chairs of the Bicentennial Commission. So, Jeff, you alluded a little while back, first to the centennial celebration. Talk to me a little bit about what that was like. I mean, I'd like, since that was the last time we had a milestone roughly on this scale, how did the city mark that occasion?
It was, by the newspaper accounts, quite the celebration. It took place over 6 days in June 1920. Started out on June the 5th with an address by Mayor Jewett at Tomlinson Hall, which stood next to the city market downtown. Well, at the time, the city itself was basically downtown. It ran just a little bit beyond the boundaries of Center Township. We had a population of a little over 300,000. There were choir concerts, special church services. The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra came to perform at the state fairgrounds because we did not have our own symphony orchestra in 1920. There was a street parade on June the 7th, which was the first birth date of Indianapolis, June 7th, 1820, when the state capitol commissioners selected Indianapolis to be the site of the state capitol. There was a street parade in downtown Indianapolis that had electrified floats, carriages, vehicles, and it's said that half of the city's population lined the streets of downtown Indianapolis to watch the parade. There was a pageant performed on June the 8th at the state fairgrounds that had a cast of 2,000 local residents reenacting the city's 100 years of history. Kurt Vonnegut Sr. was in that pageant. The pageant was so popular that it was performed again. They extended the centennial celebration by an extra day to repeat the pageant performance. And then on June the 9th, the thing that interests me the most about the centennial celebration was there was another parade, this time of floats on the White River between 16th and 30th Street. And these were electrified floats on White River through what is today Riverside Park, what was then Taggart Park. So 6 days of celebration, extensive participation and visitation by city residents. The sesquicentennial celebration was a little bit different, and it took place over a year in 1971.
What elements, first, of that centennial celebration, Steve, are going to be borrowed for this celebration, and which ones just don't? Well, I imagine electrifying floats on the White River is going to be a non-starter. Well, I'm of the school, old lifeguard, Electricity and water rarely mix. But,
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we're in the process of figuring all that out at the moment. But I think the things that we want to take from 1920 and from 1971 are the public gathering. You know, mm-hmm. the chance for the public to gather together. You know, we don't have a chance to do that as often in today's modern mm-hmm. world with technology and whatnot. But a chance for just people to gather, and that's what the centennial celebration was a lot about. And so I think you know, as a theme, we want to take that theme away from there. But as far as like specific events, that's what we're going to be really delving into. Starting, you know, actually we have a meeting next week, I believe, mm-hmm. where we're actually going to start really putting pen to paper on the actual events and opportunities that we'll have in 2020 and 2021.
So, Scarlett, and I want to pick up on what Steve was saying about the ways people gather now. I mean, you know, in some ways, as Jeff was walking through that and saying, okay, we get all of these people together to watch a parade. And, you know, it sounds like in many ways what happened is all other life in the city stopped for about a week so that you could celebrate. That's not the way the world works anymore. It's also not the way people connect. So what are the ways that are more 21st century rather than 20th century that this milestone is going to be marked?
Well, obviously, we'll have some social media components and getting people excited over social media. But in addition to that, I think it's important to recognize some of the events and things that are already going on in the city, which can be elevated through the bicentennial. So First Friday events and exhibits that are already happening, major events like the Indianapolis 500. So I think throughout this year-long celebration, which I think we'll talk about the kind of span of this celebration mm-hmm. in a little bit, but throughout the year-long celebration, we'll be able to elevate things that already happen and gatherings that are already taking place. And I think, you know, a parade downtown, while it sounds so romantic to have at least half of the population all downtown. And
although half of the population is a lot more than 200.
It's very large today. I think we also will see neighborhood-level celebrations and celebrations in some of our most celebrated venues in the city.
So the other thing that struck me, and I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this too, is that the centennial and the sesquicentennial celebration came at also kind of milestone points in the city's and the state's history, and in many ways they weren't they were either good or bad, in that, you know, that 1920 celebration was right before Indiana achieved the dubious distinction of being the only state to have its state government taken over by the Klan. And the one in 1971, I think, that you referenced, is when we're right on the edge of, you know, a major desegregation ruling and Unigov and all of the changes that in many ways created modern Indianapolis. How much of this, many of these bicentennial things tend to make history seem like an effortless, costless march forward, when in fact that's not the way human beings live at all. What steps are going to be taken to acknowledge that, you know, there were some pain, there were some stumbles, there were some falls along the way that brought us to where we are? Steve's leaning in, so I'm going with him first. But I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's important because, you know, history is, and this is going to sound like overly simplistic, but history is history. Mm-hmm. And if it happened in this city, it's part of our history, and that means good things and bad things. And you know, certainly I think everyone would love to just have a celebration where we just celebrate the positive things that have happened in our community, but we also have to acknowledge some of the less positive and more unfortunate things that have taken place in our community and you know, communities around the country and around the world for that matter. So I think that's going to be a big focus of ours.
Jeff.
Well, we have a real opportunity through the bicentennial to engage in a real frank look back at the city's history and make sure that it's not all about commemoration of only the high points, but a discussion of it all. I would say that in the centennial pageant of 1920, and in our early histories of Indianapolis, the treatment of indigenous people was very much mm-hmm. stereotyped. And so, you know, we've had conversations that
is odd given the name of the state.
Right. Yeah, yeah. We've had conversations at the Bicentennial Commission level and have begun those discussions with some of our institutional partners like the Idle George Museum to think about a way to have a discussion about the indigenous people of Indiana before white settlers came to this place. You know, we have more recently a history of redlining in neighborhoods mm-hmm. and a discussion that Central Indiana Community Foundation is beginning to lead on equity and inclusivity, that the Bicentennial can be a catalyst for those types of conversations to really carry the city forward.
Well, and even something you mentioned, redlining, but even the development of the interstate system. We call ourselves the Crossroads of America, but you know, for a lot of people who lived in those old neighborhoods, that pretty much blasted away their life. So how, Scarlett, I'm going to put you on the spot. How do you go about telling those, you know, when you come to a bicentennial? I think Steve alluded to this, people do want to come and have a party by and large. And, you know, it's a bit of a downer to, you know, to play a dirge when everyone wants to dance. But how do you go about doing that then?
Yeah, and there, of course, will be celebrations, as we've been talking, and times to celebrate. But we're working very closely with partners such as the Indianapolis Historical Society and others that Jeff mentioned to really be thoughtful about the way that we tell those stories, accurate to history and respectful to everyone in Indianapolis and those who were affected and telling their histories. And so I think there, you know, there may be panel discussions, there may be exhibits, but we're still exploring all those ideas and the best way to be, as I said, respectful and accurate to history as it was.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways Indianapolis plans to celebrate its bicentennial. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So what part of the city's story, Scarlett, I'll start with you since I've been picking on the other guys for most of the program. What part of the city's story do you anticipate will be the hardest to tell? I'm going to ask everybody the same question.
Well, I mean, I think we already mentioned a couple of those. There are several that are hard to tell. Redlining is, for obvious reasons, hard to tell. Mistreatment or misrepresentation of Indigenous peoples is a hard story to tell. But there are also challenging discussions that come along with UNIGOV. And with the building of the interstate system, even though in some ways those advanced our city, in other ways people were affected unequally through those processes. So, you know, I think we have no lack of difficult stories to tell at the same time as we have great things to be proud about.
Steve.
Jeff alluded to the one that I'm kind of most focused on, and that's the indigenous people, because I've read a lot of histories of Indianapolis, and they all tend to start right around 1819, 1820.
And there were people here before.
And there were people. There were people here thousands of years before that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so it's hard to explain. It's hard to not hard, but it's challenging to celebrate everything that we want to celebrate and that we should celebrate, but it does cause, you know, a little bit of heartburn when you think about the people who were here before, and you know, you have to tell their story as well, and so I think that's Jeff brought that point up, and I think it's right on,
Jeff.
You know, you have some individual stories. I mean, the Major Taylor story, which some of us know, would bear a retelling in a more comprehensive way. African-American race car driver named Charlie Wiggins, who was not allowed to race at the Indianapolis 500. But then, you know, broader issues like eugenics, where Indiana was one of the first states in the nation to pass a eugenics law, and it happened right here in the heart of Indianapolis.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about how Indianapolis plans to mark its 200th birthday next year and on into 2021. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named William has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. William writes, John, Jeff mentioned the importance of the White River in the city's history. Its importance is that of the biggest disappointment in the city's history. The site selection committee of the Indiana General Assembly looked for a site in the center of the state, that's point one, and two, on a navigable river. Well, one out of two ain't bad. They tried a canal, and finally, in 1847, the first railroad arrived and transformed the town in the middle of nowhere, became a city. 1821 is the year the General Assembly founded and named the new capital city. Right. And Jeff, you alluded to that. We probably ought to talk about the confusion about the bicentennial actually should be.
So that's the second birthday. There's so much in this email that I can't wait to talk about. So the state capital commissioners were dispatched to the geographic center of the state in 1820 to find a site. They selected from among three sites. One site was really what's now Conner Prairie, land near the William Conner farmstead. And then the second site was the confluence of Fall Creek and White River. And then the third site was closer to what's today Greenwood. The vote to select Fall Creek and White River was taken in June 1820. The state legislature ratified that decision, named the city Indianapolis, and then hired Alexander Ralston to plat the Miles Square in 1821. That vote was taken January the 6th. So, yes, one out of two ain't bad. Geographic center of the state, we got navigable river, we did not. But we didn't really know at the time that the White River was not navigable. There were some competitions soon after the city's founding to try to entice the flatboats to come north up the river from the Ohio. And there was indeed a flatboat that made it. But as the story goes, the pilot of that boat basically ran aground, and the boat had to sit until the water level and the river rose and he could get out of town back to the south. So our days as a river city were very, very limited.
Well, and that's always been, I mean, will we talk about that? Because that is one of the knocks that people will still deliver occasionally. You don't hear it as often as you did, that Indianapolis, unlike a lot of the other major cities, did not have a kind of organic history. It was prefabricated.
It's a planned city.
That they decided just to drop it here, in large part because it was close to the center of the geographic center.
Yeah, and in a way, I mean, it connects us to Washington, D.C. in that way. Washington, D.C. was a planned city. Pierre L'Enfant planned Washington, D.C. Alexander Ralston worked for him and...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the difference is Washington, D.C. was also tied into a national bank and all of that. There was a lot of log rolling even back then to get things done. So, Steve, how does the fact that there really are kind of rolling birth days here complicate the work of the commission?
I don't think it does too much. You know, I mean, for instance, you look back at what the Indianapolis Motor Speedway did a couple of years ago. They had a centennial era because the founding of the Speedway was a certain date. The first race was a certain date. And so they celebrated different birthdays over an extended period of time. And that's kind of the model that we're looking at now. And there actually are, you know, there are actually other dates after that, you know, like the city charter was written in the late 1820s. And then we had our first elections in the city in the late 1820s. So there are other dates.
So we could really stretch this party out.
Yeah, let's take advantage of it.
Yes, we could.
We are talking about the upcoming bicentennial for Indianapolis, which will start being celebrated next year, and who knows when it will end. My guests are Jeff Bennett, who is Deputy Mayor of Community Development for the City of Indianapolis, Scarlett Martin, who oversees the Mayor's create Indy Initiative, and Steve Campbell, who is one of the chairs of the Indianapolis Bicentennial Commission. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits about Indianapolis's upcoming bicentennial celebration. My guests are Jeff Bennett, who's deputy mayor of community development for the city of Indianapolis, Scarlett Martin, who oversees the mayor's Create Indy Initiative, and Steve Campbell, who's vice president of communications for the Indianapolis Colts, and one of the co-chairs of the Bicentennial Commission. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what a listener named Liz has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Liz, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm actually calling in from Eastern Washington. And I'm originally from the Midwest, and I'm actually looking to move back to the Midwest, and Indianapolis has been on my radar. So I was wondering, I've been there a little bit for business, and what I've seen I really like. So I was wondering if there was anything else you could kind of tell me about before I come to the area, anything you're excited about, something?
Okay, well, we've got three experts here. I'll give each of them a crack at that. Thanks very much for the call, Liz. Take care.
Well, Liz, we would love to have you here. And usually what happens is once somebody visits Indianapolis one time, they say, oh, I never knew it was this great. And it's easy to get them to come back. What's really been exciting about Indianapolis over the last 25 years really has been this complete resurgence of our downtown. And that has now spilled over to many of our neighborhoods. And so you get a really great quality of life, a really affordable cost of living, and access to amenities, to high-quality educational opportunities. And hopefully, if you're moving back for work reasons, you can literally live within walking distance of where you work.
Scarlett.
Yeah, so as someone who is also not from Indianapolis, I moved here a little over 4 years ago. And I continue to be amazed in which the ways in which the city is so welcoming, and the way in which you can get involved in almost any kind of sports, arts, or activities that you really want to be a part of. So that's been a great surprise for me as a non-native to Indianapolis.
Steve.
I think one thing that's always impressed me, especially over the last 50 years or so, I mean, and you know, there are we've talked about, you know, every city has its down points and its warts, but I can honestly say, having grown up here and lived here for more than 40 years, is that our city's leadership, governmental, nonprofit, business, all seem to work together better than I've seen anywhere else, and they are always more times than not are doing the right thing for this community, and everyone is coming together to do the right thing for this community, and that's on a lot of different issues across the board, and so it's a very well run city, and a very and a city that that comes together to get important things done that need to get done.
Jeff.
Steve hit on, I think, what's the secret sauce of Indianapolis, and that is the cooperation of government, philanthropy, and the corporate community in ways that other cities envy. And when they come here to see it, to visit for a conference or to come talk to us in the mayor's office, they ask time and time again, how do you do it? And how have you done it so well for so long?
I mean, a great example is, you know, I mean, there are lots of great examples, but one that's, you know, in the last 10 years is the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, when we decided we wanted to host the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, you know, Mayor Peterson and Mayor Ballard both picked up the phone, called business leaders, called, and they all said, what do you need? You know, and that's the answer that you tend to get from the leadership of our city over the last 50 years is that everyone drops everything and says, "What do you?" You know, when we attracted the NCAA to move to Indianapolis back in the late 90s, again, you know, the governor, the mayor, everyone, they made phone calls to business leaders and they said, "What do you need?" And you get that answer way more often than not in the city.
Which is, for those of us who have a certain historical perspective, is not the way, though, the city was always perceived. And, as part of this story with the bicentennial, how are you going to talk about that period when it's probably apocryphal, but the joke always was that, flight attendants would say when they landed at what was then Weir Cook Airport in Indianapolis, "You've just arrived in Indianapolis. Set your watches back 1 hour or 25 years, whichever you prefer." That it was a very sort of sleepy, almost backwaterish kind of place. That's not the perception now, but that's part of the story too. Steve, you're later. I think you're the only one who's old enough to remember.
It was. I tell you, when my family moved here from the East Coast in 1976, okay. I was 5 years old. And okay. I remember my mom said, we were moving from the Washington, D.C. area, and my mom said, the first thing she remembered was that the stoplight started blinking at 5 o'clock. That was her one indelible memory of us moving here. But I think we've turned the corner on the Indian no place thing. That was our nickname for a very long time. We're part of the Rust Belt. I'd say a lot of it started. There was a 1987 article, I believe, in National Geographic that featured Mayor Hudnut in the Pan Am Games, and that really started to turn around that narrative because it was National Geographic for one, and they don't do profiles on cities very often, and they did, and they profiled how Indianapolis was this jewel in the Rust Belt that was coming back, and so I think we've turned the corner on there, but it's all part of our story.
I think what sticks out for me, so there's this, and I'm the same age as Steve, by the way. out for me is a story that I seem to recall from the 60s where Sundays downtown, you could bring your shotgun, and that was the pigeon abatement program for downtown Indianapolis, where there was nobody here. You weren't going to hurt anyone, and we could do bird removal safely using firearms, apparently. But what really resonates with me is that those stories that now we kind of giggle at because they're quaint, they are quaint because we are not that city anymore. We have become a city that competes on the international stage, thanks to some just really prescient decision making over the last 50 years by city leaders, and not just city mayors, but city leaders broadly defined, men and women from all types of backgrounds, who had a vision that they cast for Indianapolis that I think we've largely achieved. And hopefully the bicentennial can help us think what are the big things that we want to do going forward the next 50 years.
Yeah, one of the things you hear is that Indianapolis has had a phenomenal run. You can either say luck or of wisdom in terms of
probably both
of the people who have occupied the mayor's office during that period of time. And, they belong to both parties. How do you, Scarlett, as someone who's coming to this in some ways from the closest from being an outsider, I suppose Steve technically qualifies having been born in D.C., but how do you tell that story? Because that often doesn't help, doesn't happen in other cities where there are fairly routine transfers of power back and forth, but the progress continues almost as if there was no interruption.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so important that the mayor decided to have a bipartisan bicentennial commission to really highlight the work that's been put in by people on both sides of the aisle. And it's something that the mayor has thought is incredibly important in the almost 4 years that he's held the office. And I think that I think that Indianapolis is actually really unique in this way from other places that I've lived, that truly working together does not really matter which side of the aisle that you're on, that we have some common goals to move our city forward.
Yeah, I was for those who don't remember ancient history, I used to work in the mayor's office, and I was a part of two intra-party transitions, a transition from Mayor Goldsmith, who was Republican, to Mayor Peterson, who was a Democrat, and then a transition from Mayor Peterson, who was a Democrat, to Mayor Ballard, who was Republican. And I remember the lessons from 1999. You know, Mayor Goldsmith, you know, brought Mayor Peterson into his office and said, the same thing I said earlier, what do you need? It didn't matter that my party's candidate didn't win. What do you need? And I remember when Mayor Ballard was coming into office, Mayor Peterson told everyone on the staff, he says, do everything you can to make this as smooth as possible. And he told Mayor Ballard, what do you need? And I think that that's just tremendous, especially in current political times. That's amazing and a credit to Indianapolis.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Nate. And again, if you want to join this conversation via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Nate apparently asked about his favorite things about Indianapolis, listed 1, the canal; 2, the Colts. There you go, Steve.
Right.
3, the Circle; 4, Bob and Tom. and I think that's it. 5, it looks like he's naming himself. so
congratulations, Nate.
Yeah. So in terms of Scarlett, in terms of, you alluded earlier to sort of the scope and how this celebration is going to unfold. Could you walk me through the timetable? I mean, when sort of the birthday festivities will begin and when they will begin to wrap up?
Yeah, so we just made a first announcement about the bicentennial a few weeks ago that we are now currently hosting a bicentennial logo competition. So that's kind of the very beginning of what we're trying to do for the bicentennial. And so bicentennial.indy.gov for more information on our bicentennial logo competition. We will be selecting a logo in the fall in anticipation of this kickoff of our bicentennial celebration next year. The official celebration will start June 1st of 2020 and run through the end of May of 2021. So again, capturing a full year and all the wonderful things that happen in Indianapolis in a year, but really elevating them and adding context to them in celebration of the bicentennial.
Jeff, electrified floats were probably cutting-edge technology
back
in a century
electrified
ago.
Everything.
What is going to be the cutting-edge stuff for this celebration?
I think Steve alluded to this a little bit earlier. We're gonna have some pretty intensive event planning next week to figure out what will be the city's signature event or events, whether it's cutting-edge, electrified everything, that remains to be seen. Whether it's a combination of cutting edge and traditional, I think Scarlett mentioned the idea of an ice cream social. Whatever we do, we want it to involve the broadest cross-section of our residents as possible. So we don't want this to be a series of exclusive ticketed events that one can't get into. But how do we cast as wide a net as possible to really reach out to all of our residents to get them involved.
And how, Steve, I mean, again, listening to the way this was celebrated a century ago, it is pretty much, it sounds like the city just came to a stop for about a week to mark the occasion. But it's not just Indianapolis, the world these days. You know, business doesn't stop. Nothing stops. How do we acknowledge this event in that kind of nonstop, you know, no one ever takes a breath kind of?
Sure. I think it's just the kind of the lesson of how we live today. You have to go to where people are. And that's why, as Scarlett said earlier, there are a lot of existing events that we want to bring under the, you know, bring into the bicentennial fold. And, you know, so when the Indianapolis 500 happens that year, we hope that they will take a special moment to commemorate that. So we go to where the people are. And then, just like Jeff said about this being inclusive, this we don't want just this to be downtown events either. Mm-hmm. We want to be out in neighborhoods. We want to go to where people are already are and already gathering. And so I think that's a way you accomplish anything is by going to where people are.
And there are still times that the city stops. Mm-hmm. We stop on race day.
That's true.
We stop largely on the 4th of July because much of the city and the region migrate to downtown Indianapolis to watch the fireworks.
But even that's a change. I mean, frankly, Indianapolis used to stop for the entire month of May.
Well,
Now it is pretty much just that one day and really that one afternoon.
Yeah, and that's probably in response to your point about that mm-hmm. we live in a changing world. So if we have a year's worth of events, both city-focused, neighborhood-focused, we're going to give lots of opportunities for people to connect with the Bicentennial in the way that's meaningful to them.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about the upcoming Indianapolis Bicentennial. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Reed has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Reed, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm Reed. I've called before. I seem to be a chronic naysayer, rain-on-your-parade person. I just kind of want to make a rhetorical comment about the utter desolation of the east side of this city and how there's no work, no grocery stores, and I just don't think that people living over there are going to be in a very celebratory mood about the white people's celebration about what a great cosmopolitan city we are now when we aren't. And so I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks,
but I just think you're all just a little too proud of yourselves. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Reed. Jeff, do you want to take that, or Steve? Either one of you. You're both leaning in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very proud of the city, and I say that without hesitation, without shame, without embarrassment. That I'm very proud of the city because we have accomplished a lot of great things over time. Are we there yet? Absolutely not. We all know that there are pockets of the city that need help and that are getting help, quite frankly. But I don't think that's, you know, the fact that every neighborhood hasn't seen the same prosperity as others. I mean, first of all, that's something that weighs on all of us. However, there are a lot of positive stories. There are plenty of positive stories to tell about neighborhoods in the city that have come back.
So, Jeff, let me take Reed's comment and turn it into a question. How is this commemoration going to deal with his point that there are still places where there's a lot of work left to be done?
Well, I think that's been a topic of discussion in many ways at the Bicentennial Commission level, and a topic of our conversation over the last hour is that this isn't just a look back at a celebratory history of the city, but a look forward to what we want the city to become. And to the extent that we have an evolving economy in central Indiana away from the manufacturing jobs of 50 years ago and into evolving into other sectors, there are neighborhoods where, you know, jobs and resources are needed. That's part of the Indianapolis that we would seek to become. And the Bicentennial is a way to talk about those issues and to frame them in a productive way to help us envision what the city might look like in the next 50 years.
Real quickly, Scarlett, because we are just about out of time. Well, I'll tell you what. Would you go to our Facebook page and plug in where people can send suggestions for the Bicentennial? I'd like to thank my guests, Scarlett Martin, Jeff Bennett, and Steve Campbell, for what has been a lively conversation about Indianapolis's past and future. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.